KRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Two more Palestinian children die of malnutrition as the World Food Program says over half a million people face catastrophic hunger and starvation in Gaza. Islamic resistance in Iraq carries out another anti-Israeli operation hitting regime's main international airport with a drone. And Iran's president says the holy month of Ramadan provides Muslims with an opportunity to take effective steps against arrogant powers, especially the Israeli regime. And now, over 5 months into the genocide in Gaza, the Israeli regime continues killing more civilians in fresh airstrikes. Nearly 70 Palestinians were killed and over 100 injured in the past 24 hours alone. Latest attacks hit residential buildings in Rafah in Gaza City, killing at least 19 Palestinians and injuring dozens. There's also been a surge in Israeli attacks on the city of Khan Yunis to the south, where an ongoing systematic and controlled demolition of residential homes is underway. Meanwhile, the UN Secretary General has called for a truce in Gaza as the holy month of Ramadan begins.
My strongest appeal today is to honor the spirit of Ramadan by silencing the guns and removing all obstacles to ensure the delivery of life-saving aid at the speed and massive scale required.
Guterres warned international humanitarian law lies in tatters. He added any Israeli assault on Rafah could plummet the people of Gaza into an even deeper circle of hell. Overall death toll from an Israeli onslaught has risen to over 31,100, most of them women and children, and more than 72,000 others have been injured. The World Food Program has warned of what it called the worst food crisis in recent history of the besieged Gaza Strip. It says more than half a million people are facing catastrophic hunger and starvation there. The WFP says the risk of famine in Gaza increases by the day, adding its entire population is now in desperate need of food assistance. Severe food and water shortages have already taken a heavy toll on the Palestinians of Gaza. Two Palestinian babies died on Monday due to malnutrition and lack of medical supplies, bringing the tally of such fatalities to 27 since Israeli onslaught began in early October. This while people throughout the blockaded territory are observing the fasting month of Ramadan. The Gaza Health Ministry says more than 2,000 health staff in northern Gaza have not found anything to break their fast with on the first day of Ramadan. Now, Palestinians in Gaza are welcoming the holy month of Ramadan amid huge loss of life and devastation caused by a U.S.-Israeli campaign of genocide. Mutu Abu Musaba joined us earlier with an update from the central city of Deir al-Balah.
This is not the first time Palestinian people are spending Ramadan under Israeli aggression. In 2014, the Israeli regime also waged a destructive war on Gaza during the holy month. However, the current genocidal war is unprecedented in terms of its colossal casualties. Many Palestinians have become orphans and widows and lost their children. The memory of their loved ones will stay with them in Ramadan.
The life here is so difficult. The holy month of Ramadan is around the corner and we are still displaced from our homes and our families are torn apart. We have nothing to eat for iftar. I'm originally from Gaza. I've lost 37 members of my family. They were so close to my heart. Every time I remember them, my gut is wrenched and I become so sad and furious.
With markets destroyed and goods scarce, Gazans don't know where their iftar meals will come from, which means more suffering and agony. The vast majority of the people live in small tents amid the starvation that has already claimed the lives of several Palestinian children.
The situation in Gaza is very difficult. There is no food. The people are struggling to find anything to eat with flour scarce. Here in the south, they queue in long lines for food. Even those who attempt to get anything from the aid trucks are putting their lives at risk as Israeli soldiers open fire on them. I don't know what we're going to do in Ramadan.
Palestinians' catastrophe doesn't stop with the loss of their relatives. It is deepened by the full-scale destruction that has become palpable in every corner of Gaza, including mosques, which means they won't be able to say their prayers and worships as usual. Even if their mosques hadn't been destroyed, it would still be impossible for them to perform their prayers under the incessant Israeli bombardments.
The humanitarian conditions are completely disastrous. The people were displaced from several parts of Gaza, including the northern and central areas of the Strip. It is literally catastrophic. There is no source of income or food, and the people are completely relying on the small amounts of donation provided by limited numbers of charity institutions. In addition to that, mosques have been completely destroyed by Israeli warplanes, and we will never be able to pray in them.
While some aid has been trickling into Gaza, it's minuscule compared to the needs of the Palestinians. With Ramadan arriving, more assistance cannot come soon enough for them.
As the whole Muslim nation welcomes Ramadan, Palestinians are wondering why they have been abandoned by many Muslim leaders to face the Israeli campaign of death and starvation. To Abu Musabbih, the central area of Gaza Strip.
The Iranian president says the holy month of Ramadan presents an opportunity to fight hegemonic powers, particularly the Israeli regime. Ibrahim Raisi said a cherished month can reinforce ties among Muslims and strengthen and promote Islam. He expressed confidence that Palestine will be liberated as Palestinians continue battles against Israel and Muslims continue to keep up their earnest support for them. Raisi made the remarks in a congratulatory message on the occasion of the advent of the fasting month. In a social media post, Iran's foreign minister also said Muslim countries can come closer in Ramadan and take the initiative to stop U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza. Hossein Amri Abdullahian stressed that Palestinian people and resistance will be the ultimate victors on the battlefield. People across the Palestinian territories began Ramadan on Monday amid malnutrition and dehydration in Gaza. The UN estimates about a quarter of the Gaza population risks starvation, and aid is barely scratching the surface of their daily needs. We'll now take you to Rafah, where some Palestinians describe their miseries and their hopes for a lasting ceasefire.
First day of Ramadan is very tough. We don't know what we are going to cook, what we are going to have for iftar. There is no gas. We get out of the tent in the cold to light fire, and it's really cold. How are we going to cook? Also, the prices are unimaginable. Prices of the tomato and the potato. The prices are high. We can't get meat or chicken. Everything is very expensive. In this situation, we don't want aid. What we want is a ceasefire.
We're happy that we're in Ramadan, but we're not happy that we've been displaced from one place to another. We don't want to stay in a tent. We want to settle in our homes and for things to return to normalcy, and may God bring peace and fix the situation. We don't want food or drink. We want to return to our homes, check on them and stay there in happiness. We are living and sleeping here in fear.
I'm 71 years old and I've never experienced a Ramadan with this feeling. It's an awful feeling. At times like this during Ramadan, I used to prepare the dining table to eat at sunset. But today there is no food and I don't have money to get food for iftar at sunset.
Israeli forces have murdered two more Palestinians as they carry out fresh raids on the occupied West Bank city of Tul Karam. Mohammed Jafar and Mustafa Jaber were shot dead near the town of Atil, north of Tul Karam. That happened after an undercover Israeli Special Forces troop opened fire at him from a civilian car. Regime forces also killed 25-year-old Tawfiq Aid Fawaz Hussein north of Tukaram by live fire. Tensions are running high throughout occupied territories where Israeli troops are carrying out deadly raids on an almost daily basis. The regime forces raided several areas Monday, the first day of the holy month of Ramadan. Areas include the city of Qalqilya, Nur Sham's refugee camp near Tukaram, and a village west of Ramallah. They abducted a number of Palestinians following clashes with resistance fighters. The Islamic resistance in Iraq says it's carried out a retaliatory attack on Ben-Gurion Airport deep inside Israeli-occupied territories. Umbrella resistance group said it targeted the strategic international airport with a drone. It vowed to continue these operations against what it called enemy strongholds in support of the people in Gaza and in response to Israeli genocide against Palestinians. Since last October, the Islamic resistance in Iraq has carried out a series of attacks against Israeli positions. It's also attacked U.S. military bases in Iraq and neighboring Syria in retaliation for its complicity in the genocide in Gaza. And tensions continue soaring throughout the southern Lebanese border amid Israel's onslaught on Gaza. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah says it's carried out a series of retaliatory operations against Israeli targets north of occupied territories. We were earlier joined for an update by our Beirut correspondent, Mariam Saleh.
Well, we do know that Hezbollah has launched several operations, but the most significant one is the one that you mentioned, of course, against the barracks of Kayla, and that is an area which is considered very strategic for the Israelis. Also, this is, of course, very qualitative, especially with the fact that Hezbollah decided to use four drones, kamikaze-style drones, and this means that this target is very important. They say that they hit their target very precisely, and that is what they call the command center, which they targeted is the command center for the air defense system and the rocket defense areas of the Israelis. We have been hearing from the Israelis lately that Hezbollah has very focused on basically targeting the defense systems of the Israelis. And this, although it has not stopped the Israelis' activities when it comes to their air activities and their drones flying over Lebanese skies, however, it will be on the long run very detrimental for the Israeli defenses in any type of confrontation that they will have to face with Hezbollah. They are basically getting weakened. The Hezbollah also launched with their mortars and their guided missiles and perhaps even anti-tank missiles, the Jalal al-Alam post, which is also one of the posts that is usually targeted. It's on the eastern side it's on the western side of the border. They also launched another attack against Israeli soldiers in Talat al-Tayhat.
The Islamic movement in Nigeria has held a protest against the massacre of Palestinians in Gaza. Protesters marched on the U.S. embassy in the capital, Abuja, and staged a sit-in. Dan Juma Abdullahi reports.
On the first day of the holy month of Ramadan in Nigeria, the Islamic movement held a rally through the streets of the capital, Abuja, in a peaceful protest against the massacre of innocent civilians in Gaza. The protest march took the demonstrators to the gate of the United States Embassy, where they sat down and submitted a letter of protest condemning the Israeli genocide in Gaza and U.S. involvement in the killing of innocent Palestinians.
America is one of the major party in this killing of innocent female and children in Gaza. Since October 7th to date, they have killed more than 31,000 innocent people, majorly female and children in Gaza.
The demonstrators blame the United States and British governments for using their influence to block a UN resolution calling for a ceasefire. They said every decent government has condemned the Israeli terror attacks on the Palestinians, but the U.S. government has continued to support the mass murder of innocent Palestinians.
They are killing female and children. They are imposing starvation on innocent female and children. Babies have been seen under rubble, crying inside blood. We see a lot of fathers carrying a lifeless body of their children killed by Israelis. Anybody that has concern for humanity should come out today on the street and show his solidarity with Palestinians.
The demonstrators burned the U.S. and Israeli flags as they slammed Tel Aviv's regime impunity and the silence of the international community. Many Muslims in Nigeria believe that Israel's continuous killing of Palestinians in Gaza on the eve of the holy month of Ramadan is a clear proof of the regime's disrespect for Islamic sanctities. The protesters here are urging world leaders to pressure Israel to end the massacre in Gaza. Anjum Abdullahi, Abuja.
The National Iranian Oil Company signed a contract worth $20 billion to boost gas pressure at the giant South Pars field in the Persian Gulf. Under the strategic project, 90 trillion cubic feet of gas will be available for use. Fatima Masumi has more.
The Iranian National Oil and Gas Company says that this is the most strategic project in the history of Iran's oil and gas industry and its long-sought empowerment of domestic entities. Under this project, 90 trillion cubic feet of gas and 2 billion barrels of gas condensates will be available for use. Top Iranian companies Petropars, Oil Industries Engineering and Construction, Khatam al-Anbiya Construction Headquarters, Mapna Group, and a consulting company are the contractors of the mega project.
In the subject matter of the development and increase of capacities of the gas and oil refineries, we witnessed the second phase of Abadan refinery with the capacity of 210,000 barrels, which helped the production and supply of gas in the country. In the 14th phase of the South Pars refineries, 50 million cubic feet of gas is produced per day, which again adds to the capacity of gas production in the country.
The massive project has created an opportunity to kickstart economic prosperity and employment in the face of unilateral Western sanctions. This has also allowed Iranian producers and companies to engage greatly in the economic growth and industrial development of the country and neutralize the sanctions.
Today, all Iranian people should witness the fact that the surrounding nations trust the Iranian National Oil Company and the relative competent companies and contractors and do rely on them, because they know well that the South Pass was built by Iranian companies, and the day that they thought that it was impossible to do so without the help and presence of foreigners, that exact day was the day that South Pass became what it is today.
While sanctions have forced the governing bodies to change their attitude towards domestic companies and entrust them with tasks, it should be noted that Iranian producers are not perennial supporters of sanctions. Rather, they would like to interact and acquire world-class technologies from foreign companies to empower themselves.
With contracts for developing oil and gas field signs and projects for boosting pressure in South Pars gas field being started, Iran is experiencing yet another success in the mega gas project to exploit the immense gas field. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kHz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kHz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Limelight.
As the legal jousting by Trump lawyers, prosecutors and judges has heated up, Trump's team keeps raising election interference claims as they seek to postpone trials until post-election day. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Former US Justice Department officials say claims by Donald Trump and his lawyers that holding any of the four criminal trials he now faces before the US election in November would be election interference lack a solid legal basis and are brazen ploys to delay trials until post-election. As he campaigns to return to the White House, Donald Trump is facing unprecedented legal and political perils. Trials are pending in four federal and state jurisdictions, where he's been charged with 91 felony counts, including 17 about conspiring with allies to overturn his loss to Joe Biden in the 2020 presidential race. To thwart any damaging verdicts and negative trial coverage pre-election, the former US president and his lawyers have pushed legal and political arguments by invoking election interference and presidential immunity, as they've sought to convince judges and courts to postpone trial dates until after next November's election. Department of Justice veterans say Trump's drive to have trials held post-election is premised heavily on hopes of winning the presidency again, and then telling the Department of Justice to kill the federal charges. So far, crying election interference in order to postpone trials until after election hasn't achieved much, but his tenuous claims of absolute immunity for all his actions as president have succeeded in pushing back some key trial dates this year in tactical wins for Donald Trump. Presently, Trump is due to stand trial on 25th of March in New York, where he faces 34 felony counts from Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, who is charging he falsified business records to conceal payments of hush money in 2016 to movie actress Stormy Daniels. After Alvin Bragg charged him last spring, Donald Trump told the gathering at Mar-a-Lago that the New York case and the three other federal and state cases then under scrutiny by prosecutors amounted to massive election interference at a scale never seen before. Trump, who has claimed he's innocent of all the charges, repeated the specter of election interference again recently on his Truth Social platform, saying, "Prosecutors aimed for the various trials to come up during my campaign." Donald Trump also erroneously claimed that very strict rules and regulations of the Department of Justice bar prosecuting a political opponent or anyone right in the middle of his or her political campaign. But former federal prosecutors say Trump has distorted Department of Justice guidelines to bolster bogus election interference claims. Paul Peltier, the former acting chief of Department of Justice's fraud section, said trial schedules of criminal cases ought to be immune from allegations of election interference by Trump and his lawyers. Once anyone is charged with a crime, the setting of a trial is purely within the purview of the independent judiciary and should be both blind and immune to outside political calendars and machinations by Trump and his lawyers. Other former Department of Justice prosecutors concurred with the idea. Former federal prosecutor Paul Rosenzweig told The Guardian, "There has been a long-standing policy against bringing new federal charges in the run-up to an election, but there has never been a policy against continuing an ongoing case just because a criminal defendant becomes a candidate for office." Paul Rosenzweig added, "If there were such a policy, a charged criminal could avoid trial by the simple expedient of running for office. Still, some trial dates have been delayed for other reasons, including cases that special counsel Jack Smith brought charging Trump with conspiring to overturn Joe Biden's win and for mishandling hundreds of classified documents by taking them to his residence at Mar-a-Lago in Florida after he left the Oval Office." The U.S. Supreme Court recently handed Trump a victory when it agreed to hear his claims of absolute immunity involving the election subversion charges and scheduled oral arguments for late April, setting back a trial once slated for March until probably August or September at the earliest. In one court filing with the High Court, Donald Trump lawyers raised election interference arguments. The special counsel seeks urgently to force President Trump into a months-long criminal trial at the height of campaign season, effectively sidelining him and preventing him from campaigning against the current president. The website Ground News has also covered the same story and tells us more. As the legal jousting by Trump lawyers, prosecutors and judges has heated up, Trump's legal team keeps raising election interference claims as they seek to postpone trials until post-election day. Trump lawyer Todd Blanche argued for holding the classified documents trial post-election at a 1st of March hearing by Florida District Judge Eileen Cannon, who is overseeing Special Prosecutor Smith's case charging Trump with mishandling classified documents. Todd Blanche said at the hearing, "A trial that takes place before the election is a mistake and should not happen. You're talking about taking Trump off the campaign trail for blocks of time for really no reason." Judge Eileen Cannon has not yet set a trial date, but has postponed the original starting time for May, in part due to start this month of the New York hush money trial. Former Department of Justice officials dismissed Trump's election interference arguments as fallacious and dangerous, given the seriousness of the charges and the stakes for U.S. democracy. Former Deputy Attorney General Donald Eyer, who served during the George H.W. Bush years, said, "The idea of prosecutions addressing systematic efforts to overturn legitimate election results are themselves election interference is just ridiculous," adding, "They are the only way that the integrity of our electoral process can be defended." former justice official and White House lawyer for part of Donald Trump's years, Ty Cobb, said Trump's claims of political persecution and election interference are part and parcel of the same disease, his crippling narcissism. It's classically hypocritical, coming from the unchallengeable king of election interference. Still, Donald Trump and his lawyers have kept up a barrage of election interference claims with an eye to getting trial dates deferred. Trump lawyer Todd Blanche in February invoked election interference in trying to persuade New York judge Juan Merchan, who is overseeing the hush money trial, to postpone it. Todd Blanche argued that since primary season has begun, it is complete election interference for the trial to proceed under 34-count indictment against Donald Trump. Judge Juan Merchan shot back, "That is not a legal argument." In a similar vein, Trump lawyer Steve Sado argued in an Atlanta court filing last year that putting Trump on trial this August, as Georgia prosecutors requested on 13 counts of conspiring to overturn his 2020 loss in Georgia, would be the most effective election interference in the history of the United States. The trial date for the case, which was brought against Donald Trump and 18 co-defendants by Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis, is now in limbo, in part because Fannie Willis has been charged with a potential conflict of interest by one defendant, which now awaits a ruling from a Georgia judge.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Viewpoints. I'm Hadi Saravi, your host. Welcome and thanks for listening. I am with our guest speakers, dear Brother Ali and Sheikh Rouhani. Thank you for being here. And thank you for giving this time to us, to this program.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. You see that every day and every moment has its own values. You know, we see that. For example, every moment, every second we live is valuable. And the same story is true when it comes to days and months of the year, among which some of them are of greatest values. For example, we have Rajab, we have Shaban. These months are so valuable, so precious. We can, that every second of it counts. And, you know, and Ramadan, as I said, is a month in which you're invited to a feast. This is a very famous quote. And the host is the Almighty Allah. What are the best things we can do to appreciate these? Some people say that read a lot, think about, or, you know, for example, different ideas. What do you think is the best thing to start, to begin?
Yes. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Of course, in the holy month of Ramadan, we are told that, of course, in fasting, sometimes we think that fasting is just this, that you should not eat and drink something. You just control your stomach. You know, it's not true, you know.
No,
fasting means that your eyes should fast, your ears should fast, your tongue and mouth should fast, your legs, feet should fast, your hands should fast, your mind, your brain should fast, you know. Everything
should fast.
And by
fasting, it's controlling.
It's controlling, So the very, the simplest controlling is not to eat and drink. It is the simplest level of controlling, which is for ordinary people, for normal people. But for the great servants of Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, there are lots of other kind of controllings. That is difficult, you know? That is why if someone can control his bad desires, his evil desires, his evil mentality, he is the one who is performing the major jihad according to the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. The Prophet told his companions that when you, for example, go to the battlefield, and sacrifice your bodies, your soul for the sake of Islam, that is minor jihad. The major jihad is to control your nafs al-ammara bisu. That is why, respected brothers and sisters, we should know that fasting is a kind of preparation for getting closer to Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which is again for the benefit of us, not for the benefit of anyone else. Then Islam is the religion of purity, of purification. Islam is the religion that focuses a lot on purity. Islam tries its best to purify our bodies, our soul, our mentality from any kind of bad things. As Islam tells us that you have to wash, for example, your hands, your face, your body whenever you go for praying. Five times a day you have to, for example, wash yourself, to clean yourself, clean your body. At the same time, we have a kind of cleanliness for our soul. The soul of a Muslim, a mu'min, should be also pure. Because when you die, you will be taken into the presence of your Lord. Your Lord is pure. And he only accepts the one who is pure. Otherwise, he will be sent to the hellfire to be purified there. That is why fasting is a great, let's say, golden chance or opportunity for every one of us to, inshallah, purify ourselves. In terms of both bodily purification and also spiritually and mentally purification. But the most important purification is the spiritually purification that we should acquire in this holy month. Otherwise, just controlling, for example, not eating from the early morning till the evening, it's not something very much, let's say, valuable. No. The thing is that during the day, during the night, always you should fast in its perfect manner.
Also, you said this purification is the, you know, you said that this purification is done in Ramadan in, and it's the highest shape,
level of purification.
Level of it, the highest level of it. Yeah, yes. So, you know, most people say that, for example, I don't, you know, this is the something that many people say and many people have it. You know, they go to the extremes. In Holy Ramadan, they do their best to purify, and sometimes they hurt themselves. Or the other part, other thing. I want to, because most people have it. I see it around. I think many people are suffering from it. Just anything, any thoughts, any comments?
Yeah, let me answer your question by a narration from the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Once the Holy Prophet was saying to his companions that in the Day of Judgment, a group of believers, a group of people will come to the Resurrection Day in the Day of Judgment, and they will they are presented and they will talk about their actions, and their actions are like mountains from good deeds and everything that they have done in their lifetime. But the command will come and say that, okay, put them in the fire. All of these people should be sent into the fire. Salman asked the Holy Prophet, oh, the Holy Prophet, what was the reason? What did they do? What kind of people are they? The Prophet said, these are the people who prayed a lot, said their prayers in the right time. They had been fasting for their whole life, and they had lots of good deeds. But at the time that something haram or unlawful and illegal was presented to them, they usually took it, and they usually and they went for it. You see, so like what? I mean, when haram, and kind of as the brother said, rightly, when haram look comes, and I mean, we are in an examination and in status of test of having a haram look at a person or in an mahram. Or something which is haram to be eaten, I mean, to be drank even. I mean, while, for example, something has been haram, or it was the right of another person. So having a fast or fasting by itself, is only one aspect of it. It's not the whole thing.
You mean they grab something haram, or they can't appreciate it?
Very true.
They can't appreciate it's haram. What is it? I mean, they can't distinguish between something which is halal or haram. They don't have this ability or this faculty.
Look,
what do you mean?
Look, we know that the thing that we are receiving is halal or haram. I mean, first we have this knowledge. Second, I want to see, we have to be careful of the input that we give to our soul and to our body.
Mm-hmm. It's very important.
Both of them are important. I mean, to the soul and to the body. Like, for example, look at the airplane that actually moves very fast. Has a certain a special kind of fuel that can be injected into the airplane itself. Not any or any form of fuel can be given to this jet or, let's say, airplane, because it is among the purest and the highest quality of the fuel, right? Mm-hmm. So with this pure food that you are receiving, your actions, your fasting becomes meaningful, right?
Then inputs are so important.
Yeah. So the input that we give to our body and soul, they are very important. For example, some of the rights that are ignored, like, for example, something is in our shoulder, like the khums of our mal, the khums of our...
You know, speaking of input, you said...
Yeah. Now it's, again, it's not very, only the input...
It's very important, you know, because the month of Ramadan is all about controlling the inputs.
Very true.
So you have to control your inputs. You have to... Be careful what
and
you
also,
take in.
There are some obligations on us through the input that we have some outputs that we need to present, like the right of, for example, khums, which we have to pay, the zakat that is on our shoulder that we need to pay. So just saying prayers and fasting without having these considerations and cautions is not enough. So we need to have a comprehensive look on the whole acts of worship and know about the philosophy of them. Depriving ourselves from eating and drinking is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's as if that we have just tolerated a hard time for ourselves. So we need to have the philosophy behind them and to act upon what we have been ordered. Yes, if we need to, take the output of this psalm or fasting, which is sabr or patience. So have we considered and have we looked at a comprehensive look on all the issues?
You mentioned something. This is very important that you realize that that the meaning behind or philosophy behind what you do and what your actions.
Yeah.
This is very important because some people are doing it and they don't know why. Mm. They're just doing it without knowing why. And very good, well said. Thank you. Also, any last words, anything you want to add, you think is missing and you want to say, dear Rouhani, you or Mr. Brother Ali,
okay.
Anything which is missing you would like to add? That I didn't talk about.
Yeah, about some of the good benefits that fasting has for the people is this, that it improves our self-controlling, our ability in self-controlling. It improves different kinds of capacities and abilities in us. Sometimes we are not aware of many of the capacities and abilities that we have. But when we fast, we understand that, okay, how greatly we can do lots of things,
of course,
you know? And it opens like windows to the unseen, let's say, aspects of our life. It shows us some of the capabilities and capacities.
You begin to realize your potentials.
You know that, what great potentials you have, and you can live in accordance to those potentials in the future. That's why fasting will have lots of benefits for the people as well.
Well said. Thank you.
One last point that I want to mention is that that I have learned it from the famous hadith that has been said again in the khutbah, or sermon of the Holy Prophet at the end of the holy month of Sha'ban, at the end of month of Sha'ban, that the Holy Prophet said, فَإِنَّ الشَّقِي مَنْ حُرِمَ غُفْرَانَ اللَّهِ فِي هَذَا الشَّهْرِ الْعَظِيمِ. That is, the unfortunate is the one who has deprived himself from the benefits of this great month. So this month is not an ordinary month. We need to know about the value, the importance, the greatness of this month. This is a month that we can start our self-building. I mean, to work on ourselves and to just to forgive those who have a right on our shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
If we want Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to forgive us, at least we need to do something to make ourselves very similar to the act of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, to forgive whatever is on our shoulder. I mean, to forgive everyone who has a right on our shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And to benefit and to value every single moment of this month, and to be to be blessed from the blessings of this whole month, and to inshallah become a receptive, and let's make ourselves a receptive of Allah's blessings and the reign of His rahmah in this month.
I hope that happens, and thank you for all that you said. I think You meant that by forgiving, we open, we let ourselves to give.
Very true.
By forgiving, we are open to take, we are open to receive, and this is very important. Thank you. That was all the time we have. Ramadan is the month of Imam Ali also, one entitled the Speaking Quran, as to speak. In this special occasion, we can ask him to help us find the way. As you have heard the famous quote from Prophet Muhammad a lot, that he is the only gate to all the wisdom. Thank you for all the thing, for all the, this time you gave to us. Hope you enjoy your time. May the Almighty bless you all. Farewell. Bye-bye. Allahu, Allahu, Ya Rabbi, Ya Allah. Allahu, Ya Rabbi, Ya Allah. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah. محمد رسول الله محمد رسول الله أرجو رضاك يا الله أنت الرحيم يا الله هبني عطاك يا الله أنت الكريم منك العطاء يا الله أنت العظيم يا فيك الرجاء يا الله أنت الحليم الرحمن الستار ملك الملك الغفار الوهاب المنان المتعال الرحمن الستار ملك الملك الغفار الوهاب المنان المتعال الله الله يا ربي يا الله الله يا
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
The Limelight.
Shop thefts in England have more than doubled in the past 3 years, costing retailers some £953 million a year. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. UK shop workers are facing 1,300 incidents of violence and abuse a day and a battle to control brazen acts of shoplifting as pressure mounts on ministers to intervene to protect retail employees. According to the British Retail Consortium, the trade body which represents most major shops retailers in Britain, retailers saw the number of incidents of racial abuse, sexual harassment, physical assaults and threats with weapons rise 50% last year, while thefts more than doubled to 16.7 million incidents. The rise in retail crime has coincided with a period of rampant price inflation, with the cost of everyday goods from eggs to baby formula increasing over the past 2 years at a rate not seen since records began in the 1970s, leaving many families struggling to make ends meet. Some experts argue that efforts to cut labour costs by using technology such as self-checkouts have contributed to the problem, while retailers are blaming a rise in organised crime and scarce police resources. Helen Dickinson, the British Retail Consortium's chief executive, called for police to step up the number of arrests. Helen Dickinson said, despite retailers investing huge sums in crime prevention, violence and abuse against retail workers is climbing. Criminals are being given a free pass to steal goods and to abuse and assault retail colleagues. No one should have to go to work fearing for their safety. The number of thefts has quadrupled on pre-pandemic levels. Violence and abuse, which fell after a spike during the lockdowns of 2020, have jumped back up and are now three times higher than before the pandemic. The latest figures come after almost 90 retail leaders, including the bosses of Tesco, Sainsbury's, Boots and WH Smith, wrote to the government in October, demanding action on rising retail crime, as they said violent criminals were emptying stores. The British newspaper The Financial Times has also covered this story and tells us more. Retailers want the British government to introduce a standalone offence of assaulting, threatening or abusing a retail worker, arguing that this would enable police to understand the scale of the issue and send a message that such crimes are being taken seriously. Under a similar law introduced in Scotland in 2021, retail crimes now carry tougher sentences and require police to record all incidents of retail crime and allow the allocation of more resources. Helen Dickinson, the British Retail Consortium's chief executive, said, "Why should our hard-working colleagues south of the border be offered less protection?" Katie Bourne, the Sussex Police and Crime Commissioner, who is the lead for business crime at the Association of Police and Crime Commissioners, said the levels of retail crime being reported were unprecedented, adding, "Every day retail staff are facing the consequences of shoplifting, brazen behaviour, and that's why I have supported the call for a specific offence of assault on a shop worker." She added, "Our courts need to work more efficiently and shoplifters need to be deterred from re-offending." The Co-op, which has more than 2,000 stores across the United Kingdom, said it was installing 200 secure till kiosks, locked cabinets for expensive goods and artificial intelligence technology to monitor self-checkouts in its supermarkets after a 44% surge in retail crime last year. It has also doubled the amount it spends on security guards. Last year, the fashion and homeware retailer Nexus boss Simon Wolfson also said he had seen a rise in shoplifting which had hit profit margins at Next. That came after John Lewis said it suffered a £12 million year-on-year increase in theft, with its chair Sharon White calling shoplifting an epidemic. Paul Gerard from the Co-op said the majority of thefts were by people stealing to sell on goods in large volumes and could be accompanied by threats of abuse. Gerard added, "People are being followed home from work. I know of one example where we had to move people for their own safety." He said violent theft happened in city centres and leafy market towns, with professional criminals moving on to other stores if extra security measures were put in place at a favored target. Co-op stores in some areas were reporting more than two incidents a week, where criminals have jumped over till kiosks to steal cigarettes, lottery cards and cash. However, Paul Gerard said there had been green shoots in the past few months as a result of the government's Retail Crime Action Plan published in October, which includes a police commitment to prioritise attending reports of shoplifting involving violence against a shop worker or where security guards have detained an offender. The plan also involves the more controversial Project Pegasus, under which 10 of the country's biggest retailers, including Marks & Spencer, Boots and Primark, are handing CCTV images to police to be run through databases using facial recognition technology in an effort to identify prolific or potentially dangerous individuals. Paul Gerard said police attendance at incidents at co-op stores had shot up to 60% from 20% in October, which was a real step forward. He said, until October, there was no risk in engaging in that type of activity, and now there is a real risk of being arrested and prosecuted. Recently, a coalition of Britain's largest retail associations, including the British Retail Consortium and the Association of Convenience Stores, sent a letter to every police and crime commissioner in England and Wales, decrying a level of shoplifting that they said was having an enormous financial impact on businesses. They said retailers are facing unprecedented levels of shop theft in their stores, with many now seeing organised looting of their businesses on a regular basis. Yet, the Association of Convenience Stores, which represents more than 30,000 local shops, told the Financial Times that shoplifting in its sector had risen to a level it had never seen before. It argued that the discrepancy between the experience of retailers and official statistics was because of a lack of crimes against business, only 16% by its estimation being reported.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.